Welcome to another broadcast of Rocco Fiume Football on the Artist First Radio Network. Send your emails in to dj@artistfirst.com. All past shows can be downloaded free and on demand at the Artist First website. Now let's take an honest look at college football in America today. Here's your hosts, Rocco and Rocco Fiume.
Thank you very much. Welcome to our third season of Rocco Fiume Football. This is a show where a father and son team take a look at college football. Neither of us played college football. We just kind of take a view from the fans in the stands and give you our opinions. We welcome your questions, comments, or arguments. Please, if you have any of those, send them to dj@artistfirst.com. As we look at college football this week, this was called Road Test Week in college football. There were 11 teams that were ranked that were on the road. A stern test for a lot of those teams. Actually, seven of those teams passed the test, and four teams failed the test. And let's look at exactly why that happened. First of all, we have number one, Oklahoma. They traveled to Florida State, which was the marquee game of this week, and it ended up Oklahoma 23, Florida State 13. It was a hostile crowd in front of a lot of rabid fans down in Florida State. They were looking to avenge last year's pummeling at the hands of Oklahoma. They came up short. It was a great game, but Oklahoma prevailed, and Oklahoma indeed solidified their number one ranking. Then we look at number three, LSU, winners Thursday night over Mississippi State. LSU's defense came up big, came away with an interception and a sack on the final two possessions. One of the things that came out in this game, which is really amazing when you think about football at any level, whether it's high school, whether it's college, these teams have played for 105 times. This is the first time that both teams were ranked. That's hard to believe. 105 times, LSU came in ranked number three, Mississippi State came in ranked 25, and LSU prevailed. Next we have number four, Boise State. If you aren't a believer in Boise State before, you should be now. Kellen Moore was unbelievable, throwing for 455 yards. And if you think about it, this is a Toledo team that is now 1-2, but has played two very tough games on the past 2 weeks. They traveled to Ohio State and barely pulled off the upset of the Buckeyes, and then they hosted Boise State. But it's unbelievable that Kellen Moore picked up his 40th career win in a couple weeks. He will become the winningest quarterback in NCAA history. Next, you look at number six, Stanford. They went on the road to Arizona, scored on its first play of the fourth quarter, and again, we sort of have a theme here that I'll talk about later in the show, but Andrew Luck passed for 325 yards and two touchdowns. Again, now Stanford owns the longest winning streak in Division I. Next, we have Oklahoma State. They passed their test on the road. They traveled to Tulsa, and there was a weather issue. The game was delayed a couple times, but Oklahoma State came away with a 59-33 win. I think at the end of the first half, the teams agreed to shorten halftime and also to shorten the third and fourth quarter by a couple minutes, but it didn't matter to Oklahoma State. They continued to roll. Next, we have a team that's sort of surprising now, and that is West Virginia. West Virginia was 37-31 winners over Maryland, a Maryland team that weeks before had beaten a pretty solid Miami team. Maryland quarterback Danny O'Brien was intercepted with just over a minute to go to kind of seal that. And, you know, West Virginia's quarterback threw for a career-high 388 yards and a touchdown. West Virginia's now won six straight games in that series, and West Virginia's going to move up the polls. That's hard to believe because, you know, people didn't consider them a top 25 team, but they're rolling right along. And now we also have Texas going on the road. A lot of the pundits, a lot of the experts said UCLA was going to avenge this. They got pummeled last year. They were going to run the ball down Texas' throat. I don't think so. Texas Texas won 49-20 in Los Angeles. And after rushing for 85 yards last year, Texas racked up almost 300 yards. So Texas, again, is getting some good quarterback play out of Colt McCoy's younger brother, Case. And it's funny that the quarterback to receiver tandem that won Texas so many games years ago is now with the younger brothers taking over, which is the McCoy to Shipley, both younger brothers, of course, of Colt McCoy and Jordan Shipley. Both of those younger brothers are now at Texas, and they're rolling right along. Now, as I mentioned before, we had some teams that went on the road and did not fare so well. The first one that's up is number 15, Michigan State. They traveled to Notre Dame. Now, you kind of wondered about this because, you know, Notre Dame had lost two embarrassing games early in the season. Of course, they lost to South Florida, and then they had that horrendous fourth quarter last week at Michigan, and you wondered about their defense. They really stepped up and played well against Kirk Cousins, one of the better quarterbacks in Division I. Robert Blanton intercepted Kirk Cousins and brought it back 82 yards in the fourth quarter. Notre Dame limited Michigan State to 29 yards rushing. You kind of wonder, though, about how good Michigan State is. You know, you really got to look at that, look at their history, look at what's been going on there. I actually thought this early in the season. You know, last year Michigan State was one of the tri-champions of the Big Ten with Ohio State and Wisconsin, and I really thought they were going to be one and done. I just felt like they were playing on a lot of luck last year. I know they were a talented team. I have the utmost respect for Mark D'Antonio, but it really looked last year like they were inches and seconds away from losing four or five games last year, and that's really starting to show this year. So you sort of wonder about Michigan State and about the landscape of things there. Now next, another disappointing road game, and that was number 17, Ohio State. Horrible. Anemic offense. Unbelievable. Miami avoided its first 0-2 start since 1978. As I mentioned earlier, Miami was pretty much outplayed at Maryland Labor Day evening. Didn't look to have much strength coming in, but Ja'Cory Harris and some of those players were reinstated. They got back into the swing of things, and it really never seemed like Ohio State got on track. I thought their defense settled down about midway through the second quarter and really held things in check until a final drive late in the game from Miami. But Ohio State, boy, you talk about an anemic offense. They weren't able to muster anything. They got a little bit of a spark from Jordan Hall, who's coming off of a suspension and got back into the swing of things. They had no quarterback play. They completed, I think, four passes for 22 yards. You know, sort of the old adage, if you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks. I think Ohio State's got to look at themselves, especially offensively, look what they're going to do. Miami came out of the blocks quick. Lamar Miller, who rushed for 26 times for 184 yards. I think Ohio State has given up something ridiculous in like the last 7 years. They've only given up five or six or seven 100-yard rushing games, and Lamar Miller comes out, busts out a 50-yarder on the first play from scrimmage for Miami, gets 184 yards, and never looks back. So I think Ohio State's got some things to look at. Actually now, it's hard to believe, but broken this week was Ohio State's, they had the longest streak of being ranked in the top 25. It goes back to November of 2004 up until this past week. Ohio State was ranked in the top 25 every week. For those of you that are calculating at home, that's 103 straight weeks that Ohio State was ranked in the top 25, and they fall out, and deservedly so. They have some things to work on if they want to get back in the Big Ten race and back in the national spotlight. Of course, this game was marred by all the suspensions and all the off-the-field antics that have gone on, both with Miami and Ohio State, dating back to Coach Tressel's resignation Memorial Day weekend. Miami being recently found out to have their one of their famous alums giving money for different things, none of which that are favorable. So, of course, that game was marred by that. Then another streak that was broken, Auburn's longest winning streak of 17 games. That was the nation's longest coming in. They go into Clemson. They were winning, but actually pretty big. And Clemson came back at home and beat Auburn 38-24. Clemson now becomes a 3-0 team that looks to be reckoned with. Their schedule is tough because of their conference, but certainly Clemson has some things to look at in a positive light after their win over Auburn. And then Arizona State. Boy, you kind of wonder about that. Number 22 Arizona State goes to Illinois, and they did nothing in the fourth quarter. They had a comeback attempt. Illinois now sneaking into the top 25. Again, Nathan Shilhaus passed for 135 yards and a touchdown. Illinois ended a 10-game losing streak to top 25 teams, one that dated back to 2007. So they crawl back in. So again, you know, you got to kind of look at college football and the things each week we look at, what it's told us, things we learn, things we still wonder about. And what I'd like to do now is look at actually some, after the dust has settled after 3 weeks, who exactly are our Heisman favorites. Everybody discusses that. And really there's going to be four or five names that are bandied about. Some guys are going to be in, some guys are going to be out. I think it's really tough nowadays to be a running back, because if you look at the history of the Heisman Trophy, actually very, very few running backs have won it. It's been primarily a quarterback award. And so it's no surprise that three of my top four are quarterbacks, but my number one pick right now is a running back, and that's South Carolina's great running back, Marcus Lattimore. To date, he has 534 yards. He's averaging 6.1 yards per carry, and he has 7 touchdowns. That's amazing. Now, I know right on his heels, everybody's got to be looking at Kellen Moore from Boise State. Unbelievably, he's 60 of 76 for 716 yards and 8 touchdowns. And as if you look at the schedule, Boise State's schedule sets up as it did last year, that they're going to win some games. They're going to win some games handily. Now, the thing they got to look at is how much are they going to play Kellen Moore? There's going to be games when they're up 24-28, 35-0 at halftime. Do you put him in? Do you keep him in? Do you keep running up the stats? But let me tell you, this guy can play. Kellen Moore's a winner. He can play with anybody. And then my third Heisman candidate right now is Andrew Luck, the great quarterback from Stanford. He's projected by many to be a number one draft pick coming up. He's 57 for 85 for 786 yards and 8 touchdowns. Amazing numbers for Andrew Luck. And then finally, my number three pick is Russell Wilson from Wisconsin. The thing about all of these guys, and by the way, Russell Wilson is 50 for 66 for an astounding 791 yards and 8 touchdowns. All three of my quarterback candidates have 8 touchdowns. Russell Wilson actually has the most yards, but they're not going to need to rely on him because Wisconsin flat out can run the ball. And I think Kellen Moore at Boise and Andrew Luck at Stanford, those teams are going to have to rely on them a little more. But what we need to look at is, you know, if those teams keep winning, that's another thing about the Heisman Trophy. It's quarterback-driven and it's winning-driven. If any of these teams fall off because of their schedules or they stumble, get upset, then those guys fall out of the running. But for right now, it looks like Wisconsin's going to win a lot of games, and Boise's going to win a lot of games. So it might not surprise people that Kellen Moore and Russell Wilson sneak into that group. We're going to take our first break of the evening. A reminder that you're listening to Rocco Fiume Football on artistfirst.com. Again, send any comments, questions, or concerns to dj@artistfirst.com. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about things we learned and things we still don't know in the world of college football. We will be right back.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, "What if?" Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
You put your keys between your knuckles. Someone approaches you and you cross to the other side of the street. You lock the door behind you. Maybe twice. Now you feel safe. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not eating right, if you're not active, or if you smoke, you're putting yourself at risk for disease. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at everydaychoices.org. A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Rocco Fiume Football on the Artist First Radio Network. Send your emails to dj@artistfirst.com. Let's get back to the show. Here's Rocco and Rocco Fiume.
Thank you and welcome back, everybody. We have a segment now we're going to call What We've Learned and What We Still Don't Know. We're going to look at what we've learned in college football after a couple weeks. The first thing is that the NCAA is still very confusing to me. I don't understand how just because someone graduates from college, they can transfer wherever they want. That's the first thing. Now, nothing against the young man, but Russell Wilson had attended North Carolina and just didn't like the way things were going there. He's a great young man. He's a great quarterback. Again, this is not personal against him. But just because he had graduated from North Carolina, the NCAA allows him to transfer to Wisconsin. I'm not sure that's a stipulation where you should allow someone to transfer. So you have other kids that want to transfer for much more legitimate reasons. I mean, Russell Wilson just didn't like the fact that North Carolina coaches went to him and said, look, you got to decide between football and baseball, and we're going to make a decision based on that. He didn't like it. He had graduated early from North Carolina. He said, see you later. But you have other guys whose coaches might be fired, might have hardship cases where their family's in need of something and they need to transfer closer to home. They cannot transfer from a Division I school to another Division I school without sitting out. It just doesn't make any sense to me. The next thing is, of course, all these suspensions. You have guys at Ohio State who got tattoos. Sure, it was against the rules. Sure, it was traded for things. Sure, there was memorabilia involved. But let's face it, they're young kids. They got tattoos. And these guys are suspended for up to 5 games. Then you have other guys who are having abortions for their girlfriends paid for, who are getting hookers paid for, who are getting cars bought for them, who are getting hotels and apartments paid for them, and they're not getting any games, or maybe one game. Also, you have coaches. You have coaches who are doing what they want. Their program gets in trouble. They leave. They sit out for a year. Then they come back, and they coach wherever they want. The NCAA needs to make sure that they have some continuity, some level playing fields, and it just doesn't look good when they make decisions like that. What else do we know after week 3? Well, we already realized based on this morning's proceedings that we're going to be going to super conferences. Syracuse and Pitt are going to the ACC. However, now the Big East has come out and said it's going to cost you some money and you need to give us time. But really, that's just something that's there to get in the way. Let's face it, we're going to go to these super conferences, and what is that going to have as far as an effect on college football as we know it? Well, if we have the super conferences, what does that mean for independents? Let's look at the independents. Really, we have four big independents in the country. We have BYU, we have Army and Navy, and we have Notre Dame. My suggestion to those schools is you better get into a conference. Let's look at Notre Dame, for instance. Now, they play the first 4 weeks of the season, three of their four opponents are Big Ten schools. Now, the Big Ten, which has already expanded to 12 teams, is talking about playing 9, maybe even 10 conference games. So where is Notre Dame going to fit those teams into the schedule, and how are they going to play them? And when are they going to play them? You can't play everybody week 1 and 2, so what's that going to do to these teams that are not in conferences? Now, I know Army and Navy is a great tradition, but what are they going to do? I mean, the way it looks now with conferences realigning and these other schools getting in there and going to maybe these 16-team conferences is, you know, how are these teams going to play each other? Are these independents going to play a home and home and just play, you know, 8 games against each other? So really, it looks like the landscape of college football is heading towards these super conferences, which I completely disagree with. I'm a traditionalist. I like the Big Ten the way it was, the Pac-10 the way it was. It pretty much looks like the Big East is going to dissolve. So what's going to happen with those teams? The other thing we know after 3 weeks is you need an experienced quarterback. If you look at the teams, now I'm not talking about a senior quarterback. I'm talking about an experienced quarterback. There's not a coincidence that Stanford put up big numbers with their Heisman Trophy candidate, that Wisconsin put up big numbers with their experienced quarterback. Clemson with Taj Boyd put up huge numbers. USC, which is a team that's going to sneak into the top 25 and continue to get better because of Matt Barkley. He played a lot as a freshman and as a sophomore. Now he's experienced. Iowa, their quarterback is experienced. There's a reason they came from 21 points down to beat Pittsburgh. And then, of course, Boise State, we've talked about. They are playing fabulous football under their quarterback. Let's look at some teams that have struggled, specifically yesterday. There's a reason that Ohio State dropped out of the top 25. They don't have an experienced quarterback. There's a reason that it went down to the wire yesterday with Penn State against Temple, a team that's not beaten them since Joe Paterno was in grade school. So if you have an experienced quarterback in college football, you're going to be successful. I know you need to run the ball. I'm old school. I'm a proponent of running the ball, but you need an experienced quarterback. What else do we know after week 3? Well, I'll tell you what, folks. I'm the last one to admit this, but I'm going to admit it. I fought it all last year, but Boise State can play with anybody, and Chris Peterson can coach with anybody. I'm telling you now, if I was Ohio State, I love Luke Fickell, but he's not a head coach yet. I'd call Chris Peterson and give him a blank check and tell him, come on to Columbus. That guy can coach, and Boise State can play with anyone. They're going to go undefeated. They have a soft schedule, but they can't apologize about that. Again, I was one last year that was banging on them in Utah about not deserving to play, but sit down, put in a tape, and watch Boise State. They can play with anybody. Another thing that we know for sure after 3 weeks is Ohio State is officially rebuilding. You love to hear the old adage that teams don't rebuild, they reload, and a lot of people thought that about the Ohio State Buckeyes. But boy, they looked horrible yesterday. You wonder where they're going to land. You wonder what they're going to do with their quarterback. But do you blame them? I mean, you know, it's one thing to have a coach fired or resign in January after the bowl game, or even in November after the season, but for a coach to leave in May, and then you're looking at what are we going to do now, I think, again, I have the utmost respect for Luke Fickell. I think he's doing a great job but you just wonder where the Buckeyes are headed. We'll talk more about them as the year progresses. I hope for their sake they can get things turned around, but it looks like they're sort of in a tailspin. The other thing we realize after 3 weeks, and again, this is not earth-shattering, but the SEC is still the best conference. Let me give you an example. Here's how Auburn is going to spend their October. Week one, they're at number 12, South Carolina. Week two, they're at number 14, Arkansas. Week three, they're home to number 15, Florida. And week four, they're at number 2, LSU. And that doesn't even include their season-ending tussle with number 3, maybe number 2 or number 1 by then, Alabama. So if anybody wants to put up any arguments about what conference is the best, right there, if anybody could survive that schedule, I don't know how. And I think Auburn's a decent football team, even though they got beat yesterday at Clemson. That was in a ruckus house and tough place to play. But I don't know how anybody is going to survive that stretch in October, let alone an average football team, and Auburn is above average. So the SEC is still the best. Now, what we still don't know after 3 weeks of college football? Well, first thing we still don't know is, how good is Notre Dame? I mean, I think week one, you got to throw out the window. There was the weather. It was horrible weather. There was some issues turning the ball over. So again, even though they had a horrible loss to South Florida, I can give them a bye on that one, kind of give them a mulligan, and we were looking to week two. But how do you explain the fourth quarter against a very, very average Michigan team? I know Denard Robinson is playing well. He's an experienced quarterback, like I mentioned earlier, but Notre Dame just fell apart. They did have a little bit of a quarterback controversy. It looks like Tommy Reese is stepping up and taking reins over that over Dane Chris. But you got to wonder about them. They have some tough games coming up. It's going to determine in the next weeks to come really how Notre Dame is. And you wonder about, is it Notre Dame as far as the coaches? I mean, was it Bob Davies' fault? Was it Ty Willingham's fault? Was it Charlie Weiss's fault? Is it Brian Kelly's fault? Or is it just that Notre Dame's luster has come off since Lou Holtz left? You know, the playing field's leveled, as we talk about all the time. It used to be where if you were an urban kid that wanted to go somewhere and you had some smarts, you went to Notre Dame because of the luster, because of the Golden Dome. But now those kids are going to Northwestern. Those kids are going to Stanford. Those kids are going to Rutgers. You know, really, is Notre Dame getting the athletes, and do we want to continue to blame the coach? And again, as I mentioned earlier, should Notre Dame join a conference? The other thing we still don't know, which kind of puzzles me, is the Big Ten going to add any more teams? You know, you look at what the Pac-10 went out and did last year. The Pac-10 went out and got Utah. The Pac-10 went out and got Colorado. You see, the ACC is active right now. The ACC is pursuing Syracuse. They're pursuing Pitt. You hear Texas talking. You hear Texas A&M maybe talking, and all these conference alignments. But really, right now, if you look at numbers-wise, if we're going to go to 16 teams, you know, where's the Big Ten going to get their teams, and are they even going to add anymore? Are they satisfied with 12? Sort of even funny that the Big Ten has 12 teams, but we're getting used to it, and I really like the alignment of their two 16 divisions. But who would be the allure for them? I mean, I always thought Pitt would be a great call, but it looks like Pitt's going to the ACC. What about Rutgers? What about West Virginia? You know, all those teams. I still think Notre Dame would be a great fit in the Big Ten. But you really wonder if they're going to be able to kind of get these teams. And, again, nobody's going to wait around for some of these teams to call on them. Obviously, the ACC's got to be thrilled that Syracuse and Pitt are coming in from the Big East, or at least it looks like that. I think the Pac-12 now is settling in and getting used to Utah, getting used to Colorado going. But again, I don't think the Big Ten can stand still unless, like I said before, they're satisfied with 12 teams. But again, you're looking at now, are there going to be teams that try to contact them, or are they going to actively look to pursue things? The next thing that we still don't know as far as college football, at least in my opinion, after all this, is will this be Joe Paterno's last year? You know, you got to look at, you know, what's been going on. It seems like every year, Joe says he may retire, but he sounds like he's healthy, but then something happens where he's injured. You've had some of the times in the past couple years where Penn State hasn't played very well. They call for his neck. They certainly didn't look good against Alabama. They certainly didn't look good yesterday against Temple. And you wonder, with their schedule, how things are going to turn out and what's going to happen with them. You know, you got to wonder with the Big Ten and Penn State's schedule, the way they got to travel to some teams. They don't have a real good schedule as far as, you know, the way the Big Ten sets up. They're going to have to travel to Northwestern. They play Nebraska at home. But here's their last three games of the season. And again, we have a tendency as fans not to look at bodies of work, even though they're 60 or 70 years long like Joe Paterno's. We look at what have you done for me lately. Here's their last four games. Against number 24, Illinois. Home against number 9, Nebraska. At Ohio State and at Wisconsin. So you'll wonder if Penn State loses 1, 2, 3, or all four of those, what will happen to Joe Pa, and will the people be looking at that? And you got to wonder, a guy of his age, does he have the zest? Does he have the energy? He says he does, but obviously he's coached the last 2 weeks from the press box, and you got to kind of wonder about that. So those are the things that we've learned, and those are the things that we still don't know. What we're going to do is we're going to take our last break of the evening. When we come back, my dad's going to join us. We're going to look at things that he's come up with after 3 weeks of college football, and we're going to look ahead to week 4. So please stay with us. We'll also see if anybody sent any emails. A reminder, you're listening to Rocco Fiume Football on artistfirst.com. Again, we'll take our last break of the evening, and we will be right back.
Up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Call the American Heart Association or visit our website to learn more.
Yeah.
You are listening to Rocco Fiume Football on the Artists First Radio Network. Let's send things back to your hosts. Here's Rocco and Rocco Fiume.
Thank you, everybody. And for the last segment of the show, we're joined by my dad. Again, we just give you the opinion of a couple fans that have shared a lot of games together at college football. Dad, welcome, and give me your take on things as you see them in college football after a couple weeks of the 2011 season.
Well, once again, Rock, great first half you had. Once again, as I repeat week after week, we're in the greatest season of sports in the United States of America. There's nothing like college football. 3 weeks, it's been the most exciting 3 weeks of the year. Mm-hmm. And I have a couple opinions on comments that you made in the first part of the program. First of all, I agree with you wholeheartedly about Chris Peterson at Boise State. I personally apologize to Boise State for not giving them the credit that was due to them. They've proved to me that they belong where they are. My second comment about the things that you've said was you're talking about perhaps this is Joe Paterno's last year. My opinion is that last year was his last year. He's up in the press box, and probably not contributing very much. Joe Paterno is the Golden Dome of Notre Dame. He's the Big House of Michigan. However, his contribution to the actual game is very little. He's probably a great draw. Outside of that, I would leave the questions up to you. I think that's my opinion thus far, other than to say it's so exciting to have college football back. The games have been outstanding, interesting, and a lot of surprises.
All right, well, let me ask you something I commented on earlier in the year. I want your opinion. I commented on if we go to these big super conferences, you know, maybe 4-16-team super conferences. Do you think that's good or bad for college football?
Well, the only problem I have with that is colleges are businesses, and mm-hmm. businesses try to make money. If we go to too many, break down the conferences to what, or less of what we have now, I don't think the bowl games will be as attractive. There won't be as many playoffs as there should be. I like the way things are now.
Right.
You know, I've been actively watching college football since 1948. There have been very little conference changes, maybe bouncing around a little bit, adding a team or two to a conference, but to limit the number of conferences is not what college football is to me. So I think they ought to basically keep things as they are, and I think that they ought to stop stealing teams from conferences. Although the ACC has accepted Pittsburgh and Syracuse, the exit fee for both teams is $5 million. And
that's
then
awful.
There's a 27-month notice that they're to give the conference before they leave.
Right. I saw that, but I still don't think that's going to deter anybody from leaving. I just think that's a little bump, but I think they want to do that. I agree with you. I think it just takes a little bit away. You know, people are trying to talk about new bowl schedules and everything, but I'm a traditionalist. I like things the way they are. I really don't think if we look back on the past 10 to 15 years, I really don't think that the teams that have played in the national championship haven't been the best two teams or the two that most deservedly so. Maybe not the best two, but the two deservedly so, and then that plays out. So I really like things the way they are. I think if it gets too big, and you mentioned a word earlier, you said it's a business, and it's a shame that in the past 20 to 25 years that college football has gone to a business, but that's ultimately what we're dealing with now.
Absolutely. You know, just personally, you know that 5-6 years ago we paid $15 for a parking ticket at a major college football game. Now we're up to $45. So
right.
Business is business. Where we paid 10, 12 years ago, $15 for a ticket, we're up to $70 a ticket now. However, right. if they keep paying coaches $1 to $5 million, and the major schools have to support 36 sports, mm-hmm. between 30 and 36 sports, the school is going to have to garner some big, big funds, and the only place they could get it is football and basketball. So
right.
if the athletic directors want to keep their jobs, they've got to make money. If they're ordered
right.
to make money, the prices go too high.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's take a look at some of the big games we have on the horizon that'll be here in week four starting next week. First game we're going to look at is Notre Dame traveling to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh coming off a disappointing loss at Iowa. They had a big lead. Notre Dame, as I mentioned earlier in the show, it's hard to gauge exactly where they are. Where do you see that game? I mean, that's a game that's survived through the history of the sport. Pitt and Notre Dame seem to always play every year. How do you see that game playing out?
Well, you mentioned that Notre Dame is an average team. I think they're beyond average at this point in time. I think they've gotten better. They beat Michigan State 31-13. Tragically, Pitt loses to Iowa 31-13. However, there's one thing they have to straighten out. Pitt gave up 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter. They
right.
were leading. They beat Buffalo. They beat Maine. They lost by 4 to Iowa. I'm going to pick Pitt at home against Notre Dame.
All right. Good call. I don't know about that one. I can't figure out Notre Dame. Maybe if their offense gets straightened. I think this is a good test for them. You know, Michigan State game was at home. Let's see them win on the road. They certainly stubbed their toe against Michigan. I agree with you. I think Pitt might be a little better being a home game, so I agree with you on that one. Next, we're going to look at Arkansas-Alabama, traditionally a tough game for both schools no matter where they play it. As I mentioned earlier, one of the things about Arkansas, they lost their great quarterback, Ryan Mallett. They're playing with an inexperienced quarterback. And number 3, Alabama, boy, I tell you what, you know, they've got the running game going and the defense going, so how do you see that one playing out?
Well, everybody talks about Alabama's running game. They don't realize Alabama has an outstanding defense.
Mm-hmm.
They beat North Texas this past week. When you mentioned the Heismans, you did not mention Trent Richardson. I think he is a candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Arkansas only beat Troy by 10 points. Although they're 3-0, I think they're going to go down to Alabama.
Okay. I agree with you. I think Alabama is just too strong. I think Alabama is going to end up playing in the national championship game. I don't know how. They certainly have a tough schedule. It seems like Oklahoma always stubs their toe, so I think Alabama may move up. I don't know if Boise State's knocking on the door there, too, but I think Alabama comes away with a win this week. Now, next, a very intriguing game, Florida State traveling to number 21 Clemson, as I mentioned earlier in the show. You know, you can't fault Florida State's effort the other night against Oklahoma. It was a tough game for them. They were looking for revenge. They certainly played well. The game was tied late in the game. And then you got Clemson, you know, second-year coach, looking to, you know, get better and get better. They ended Auburn's winning streak. You sort of wonder if there's a little bit of a letdown after hosting Auburn, ending that winning streak. You know, now they're up to number 21. They're hosting Florida State. How do you see that game playing out?
Well, Clemson did to Auburn something that they're not even going to come close to against Florida State. Auburn gave up 386 yards in the air and 4 touchdowns by the quarterback of Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
Florida State lost to Oklahoma 23-13. I could tell you this. Both teams were in World War III. Both teams are tired. They're going to have a rough week of practice.
Uh-huh.
I, of course, picked Florida State. It was interesting about the Oklahoma-Florida State game. Most people know that Bobby Stoops, head coach of Oklahoma, but Mark Stoops is the defensive coordinator for Florida State. And a comment by Bob Stoops was, you root for your brother year after year after year when you're kids, and then you get to the college level, and you have to beat on your brother if you can. What a great family. And I picked Florida State, and I don't know how they dropped to number 11. They played at number one.
They did.
Oklahoma tough, and they dropped down to number 11. I don't understand that. But Florida's a big win. I'm looking for a big win.
I agree with you. Finally, we have number 2 LSU traveling to number 16 West Virginia. That's a matchup you rarely see. LSU is a team that looks like to be very strong. And as I mentioned before, West Virginia's coming on. And so how do you see number 2 traveling to number 16 West Virginia?
Well, LSU has great power, great coach. Mississippi State is good. LSU beat them 19-6. West Virginia beat what I would consider a mediocre team for sure, Maryland, 37-31. They're number 16. I don't think they're good enough. I don't think they're strong enough. I don't think you could match the coaching of LSU. I'm picking LSU.
I agree with you, and that wraps up our tough games. Dad, we have about 2 minutes left, and I know you have a sort of a human interest story involving the Stoops family that you mentioned before. Why don't you end the show with that?
Well, you know, briefly, I would have a rave for Dee Stoops, the mother of Bob Stoops, Mark Stoops, defensive coordinator for Florida State, and Mike Stoops, head coach of Arizona. Dee Stoops is a widow, and she's done an outstanding job raising those three boys. And what's interesting, she went last year to watch Oklahoma give Florida State a shellacking, 47-17. This year she said, no deal, I'm staying home. She didn't go to the game. Knowing her, I doubt if she watched it.
Mm-hmm. That's a great story. And you look at those boys, and they all obviously went to the same high school in Youngstown as Bo Pelini did. That's quite a resume to have for Cardinal Mooney and Youngstown, and certainly the Stoops brothers. Well, that's going to wrap up this show for Rocco Fiume Football. Again, we welcome comments, questions, arguments. Please send them to dj@artistfirst.com. You can join us each week throughout the college football season, Sunday evenings from 7 to 8. We're going to have our show go all the way through the Thanksgiving weekend, and we'll take us through the great landscape of college football. So again, thank you for joining us this evening. Please join us next week and the weeks to come at the same time. Everybody have a wonderful week. We'll see you next week, and enjoy college football.